Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For Democrats, they want to have government take it over. And I don't want to have the guys who did the cleanup at Katrina taking responsibility for health care in this country.
Mitt Romney at last night's Hillary Bash, also known as the Republican Values Voters Debate on Fox News Channel in Orlando. Do you know that in this debate, the name of Ronald Reagan was invoked 13 times, but the name of Hillary Clinton was invoked 32 times? With us now to debrief the debate, the state of the race, and to talk about his new book with the audacity to propose 23 constitutional amendments. We'll hear some more clips from the debate as well, is one of America's leading political analysts. He is University of Virginia political science professor Larry Sabato. He founded the Center for Politics there, and his new book is called A More Perfect Constitution, A More Perfect Constitution, 23 Proposals to Revitalize the U.S. Constitution. Professor Sabato, thanks for coming back on WNYC today. Good morning.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me and for mentioning A More Perfect Constitution.
And we'll talk about some of these proposals, I think, in brief today, and we'll have you back even another time to go into some detail on one or two of them and really have a debate. But first on this debate, this was a pretty high-profile affair in the Republican primaries, I think. It was on Fox News Channel in prime time on Sunday night at the end of the so-called Values Voter Summit in Orlando. Was this a big deal?
It was a big deal, although remember, these debates, there's so many of them that they flow one to another, and you know, there'll be another one in a few days, and then we'll forget all about this one.
Yeah, but if it's on, you know, MSNBC at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe that's a little bit different than being on Fox on Sunday night, at least in the Republican primaries.
No, that's true. That's a point I should have made. I think that's important. But again, we're in October, and the voting will begin, depending on New Hampshire, either in mid-December or more probably in January.
Right. Except for people in Boston and Cleveland who are probably watching the other Fox for the baseball playoffs yesterday, but they don't vote Republican in those cities anyway. All right, so the most two common headlines this morning are about Thompson and Giuliani going after each other on who is the real conservative. Maybe people heard those clips on Morning Edition. And how much they all invoke the name Hillary Clinton. We heard Romney doing it there. Let me play three more examples of how they made Clinton the centerpiece. Rudy Giuliani first.
She made a statement last week, and I've been very critical of her, but I want to tell her I agree with this one. Quote Hillary Clinton, "I have a million ideas. America cannot afford them all." I'm not making it up. I am not making it up. One more time. "I have a million ideas. America can't afford them all." No kidding, Hillary. America can't afford you.
All right. So Rudy Giuliani mocking and waxing what the audience considered funny. Then right after that, or shortly after that, it was John McCain's turn. And this got the biggest laugh. And I think I read the only standing ovation of the debate. Listen.
"A few days ago, Senator Clinton tried to spend $1 million on the Woodstock Concert Museum. Now, my friends, I wasn't there. I'm sure it was a cultural and pharmaceutical event. I was tied up at the time."
And one more, Governor Huckabee from Arkansas, who responded to all that joking and all that laughing about Hillary Clinton.
"You know, it's interesting, the most, I guess, wonderful reaction we've had in this entire room is when Hillary's name is mentioned. It gets louder than an Aerosmith concert. But I want to say this. You've asked, what's the difference? And no matter which one of us is on this stage, and look, I like to be funny. Let me be real honest with you. There's nothing funny about Hillary Clinton being president."
So, Larry Sabato, there's the generational difference. For one thing, McCain invokes Woodstock, and Huckabee invokes Aerosmith.
I wouldn't pick either one.
So what's behind all of that? She's not even the nominee yet.
Look, I would put it this way. The one real chance the Republican nominee, eventual nominee, has to win the presidency in 08, despite Bush's unpopularity and the unpopularity of the Iraq War, is Hillary Clinton, and they know that. listen, if the Democrats nominated someone other than Hillary Clinton, I think the Republicans would be done for because they wouldn't know how to run against the other candidate. They're so focused on Hillary Clinton because she is the most controversial and polarizing of the Democrats.
And so a strategy against each other becomes to see how much more effectively each one can dance on Hillary Clinton?
That's part of it. They're using Hillary Clinton as a broad shield to unite the party. Below that, though, they're attacking one another for specific issues. As you mentioned, Thompson going after Giuliani, and of course, McCain went after Romney, and Romney and Giuliani had broadsides in return. Huckabee tried to be the unifier, claiming he wasn't going to attack other Republicans, but he's done plenty of it, too.
I thought Huckabee did very well again, by the way. He's a clear, forceful speaker, kind of like Giuliani, you know, hardly ever says, responds very quickly to questions that he may or may not know are coming. But he's a little more soft-spoken than Giuliani. He was able to appear a little bit out of the fray, like you say, and he about tied for first in that straw poll among the people at the conference.
Yes, I think he did do well. He does well in debates, and I hear this every time he's in one. His problem is he has no resources. He does well at debates, and then he disappears in between the debates. And in the end, you need resources to carry momentum forward. Now, I do expect him to do better than expected in the Iowa caucuses, but that's not enough. You know, Pat Robertson, he's a Baptist preacher. Huckabee is. Mm-hmm. Pat Robertson finished a surprising second in 1988 to Bob Dole, pushing Vice President Bush into third place. Well, we never heard from Pat Robertson again because he couldn't carry the momentum forward to the other contests.
Right. But do you think this year really is different in terms of less focus on the evangelical social issues? Because in past years, you know, they may have looked at, that is, Republican primary voters as a whole, with as important as those kinds of issues are, may have looked at Huckabee and taken him more seriously. I think they would take him more seriously than a Pat Robertson, you know, because Rudy Giuliani just isn't acceptable on those issues, because Mitt Romney has flip-flopped just too many times on those issues. So, you know, maybe if Huckabee is not for real as a front runner now, as among the front runners, it's because something has fundamentally changed in the party, or has it?
I think, actually, you're right. I think social issues are playing less, mainly because of 9/11, but also because, again, the Republican Party is fixated on stopping Hillary Clinton. And if they're too purist about their nominee and insist on somebody who's very, very conservative on a whole wide range of social issues, they're going to lose, and they know it. That's why they're considering Rudy Giuliani. I can't think of another year when he could have run seriously as a Republican candidate, given his liberal views on social issues.
And, of course, 9/11 has changed.
Yeah, 9/11, Mayor 9/11.
Right, and people's fear of terrorism and the fact that he comes off as, you know, a strong guy in that respect. We can open up the phones for Larry Sabato, University of Virginia political scientist, on the Republican debate. We'll talk about his book and some of his 23 proposals to amend the U.S. Constitution. What? The audacity. 23 constitutional amendments, but we'll get to those. Real quick, first priority to Republican listeners, especially if you're undecided and really watching these debates with an eye to figuring out who you're going to vote for, but anyone may call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 on last night's Fox News Channel debate or the clips that we're playing of it here this morning. And let me play another clip. This one is somebody who is considered not to have a chance, but actually did surprisingly well, even in the values voters straw poll, and gets a surprising amount of attention online, got a surprising amount of millions of dollars in fundraising donations. We're talking about Ron Paul, and this may be his most memorable line from last night.
My personal belief is that marriage is a religious ceremony, and it should be dealt with religiously. The state really shouldn't be involved.
So you think you're audacious, proposing 23 amendments to the Constitution. There's Ron Paul saying marriage is a religious institution, and the state shouldn't be in it anyway.
Yeah, and I've got tenure, and he doesn't. It's easy for me to take controversial stands. He actually has to win elections. That obviously is a position that didn't play well in the hall full of Republicans. Neither does his opposition to the Iraq war play well.
That got the biggest boo of the night, by the way, at the end. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
When he said, with respect to the problem with the Kurds and Turkey, he said basically, well, we caused that by starting the Iraq war, throwing everything into turmoil in the region. And what we need to do about countries like Iraq and Iran is just trade with them, and then they won't be our enemies. And boy, did people boo him for that.
They did. And I'll tell you, obviously, Ron Paul's not going to be the Republican nominee. Nobody thinks that, or at least very few people do. But I give him credit for two things. One, he's one of the only candidates I've ever seen in a presidential race on either side who is willing to stand up and be booed. You know, most of them pander endlessly to the partisans. The second thing, he has got a large number of incredibly dedicated people. You saw that in the instant poll afterwards where he dominated it over the other candidates.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Did they have a Fox News Channel call-in poll or something?
They had a text message poll, and he got 36%. I think Huckabee was next at maybe 14, 15%. Rudy Giuliani was at 10, and the others were in single digits. Now, look, is that representative of the Republican electorate? No. But does it indicate that his people care a lot about him? Absolutely. And so do the fundraising figures.
Let's take a few phone calls. Adam in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adam.
Hi, good morning. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
So, essentially, my question to you is about looking for money. It seems to me like, for example, Huckabee does not have the resources to pursue the election, and that happens often with a lot of candidates. It seems like the candidates are either stuck either pursuing, they're looking to the lobbyists, they're looking for money the whole time, or they're out there shaking hands like supposedly Hillary is right now. Now, my ex-wife was from Australia, and she told me that every candidate there, once they make the primaries, they get the same amount of airtime. Is there any possibility of something like that here? Is it something that you think will never happen?
Adam, can I ask, are you a Huckabee fan? Is that why you asked it in that way?
No, not in general. I just feel that all of our candidates are so beholden to special interests that we, the individuals, we, the people, suffer, essentially, because we don't have the monies that these big companies can contribute.
Adam, thanks a lot. Larry Sabato?
I want to thank the gentleman because he's enabled me to plug my new book, A More Perfect Constitution. That's one of the 23 ideas that I'm suggesting to change our system and make it more accessible to people like Huckabee and others who are good candidates but don't have the money.
Proposal number?
Well, I wouldn't say I put a number on it, but it's one of the 23.
Okay. We'll leave Adam there, and we'll come back to that when we talk about your book, because campaign financing and the role of television in that is so important. Let's see. Who else? How about Dan in Huntington? You're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Brian. Mr. Sabato, I just have I'm an independent, but I lean to the right, and I've been watching everything, and I'm wondering about the fairly conservative Republican. Are they willing to lose the election, in other words, by backing somebody like Thompson, who's pretty conservative, as opposed to having a Giuliani who is conservative, but he definitely leans towards the middle, which I think gives him more of a chance to beat a Democrat?
That's the key question right there. How much are Republicans willing to compromise with their conservative beliefs, particularly Southern Republicans and Rocky Mountain State Republicans, in order to beat Hillary Clinton? Are they going to insist on purity? The old phrase, I'd rather be right than be president? We're going to find out. Now, look, there are some of the evangelical Christian leaders who absolutely seem to be willing to lose rather than to compromise, but I'd have to say they're in the minority. I've been surprised at how many of the evangelical Christian leaders have said, look, we don't agree with Giuliani on these issues, but if he's the nominee and he's facing Hillary Clinton, we'll swallow hard, we'll put that clothespin on our nose, and we'll go vote for Giuliani.
Thanks for your call, Dan. When we continue in a minute with Larry Sabato, we will play two clips of Fred Thompson from the debate that I think should raise an issue about him that nobody else is talking about. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer at WNYC.
I don't want to be president. I want to run for president. There's a difference. I'm running in South Carolina.
You'd like to lose?
I'd like to lose twice. I'd like to lose both a Republican and a Democrat.
And what statement would that make?
I think that statement would make that I was able to get on the ballot in South Carolina. And if I can do it, so can you.
So can you. Stephen Colbert there, now hoping to run himself in the South Carolina Republican primary and the Democratic primary, apparently, on Meet the Press yesterday with Tim Russert. But here, Larry Sabato, University of Virginia political analyst, is the oddest juxtaposition of last night's Republican debate for me, one that I don't hear anyone else raising. Fred Thompson in the middle of the debate and Fred Thompson at the end of the debate. Here's Thompson in the middle.
We can't lay all this at the feet of any government. We have to accept some hard truths. Part of the problem in our education system and with our children has to do with the societal breakdown that's going on in this country. We need more fathers to stay and raise their kids.
We need more fathers to stay and raise their kids. And Thompson at the end.
Tonight, our thanks and to the candidates.
And I should and add, the most important part is I'm the proud father of five. Two of them are under the age of four. So let me add that to the list.
Now, Larry Sabato, Fred Thompson is 65 years old and chose to have two kids in his 60s. And he's admonishing other fathers who don't, quote, hang around to raise their kids. When his kids are in high school and desperately need his guidance during adolescence, he'll either be close to 80 or he'll be dead. So is there something disingenuous about having kids in your 60s and then admonishing fathers who aren't around for their kids?
Well, I see your point. I try and avoid commentary on very personal matters like that. And, you know, you can say this for him. He's wealthy enough so that those kids will be well provided for whether he's still living or not. I hope he lives to 100. But I'm going to stay out of a personal commentary on that very private subject.
Do you think if it was a woman candidate who was bearing children in her 60s that it would be something out of bounds for political commentary?
Well, now that's an interesting point. There is a double standard on gender there. You know, when men have children late in life, they're called virile. When women do it, they're called a little bit crazy, and I think that's wrong.
Peter in Riverdale, you're on WNYC with Larry Sabato. Hello.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what this hatred of Hillary Clinton is on the right, given that her position is further to the right than the other Democratic candidates. Is it just something historical? Is it the fact that she's a woman? Is it
or is it just strategy, Larry? Because, you know, I mean, when you take these are the guys in the debates, in the race, right, trying to win. So what they take has to be what they say has to be contextualized. I don't know if you saw the column a couple of weeks ago by Charles Krauthammer, the very conservative Washington Post columnist, where in all seriousness, he was summing up Hillary Clinton's positions on things like trade and Iran and some other things, and saying, look, of all the major Democrats in the presidential race, Hillary is the one who he would least object to being in the White House because of all the moderate stands that she takes.
Yes, he made a good case for that, by the way, and he's one of the best writers on the op-ed page, whether you agree or disagree with any particular column. Look, remember, with Hillary Clinton, some of the opposition is rational based on issues and positions she's taken over the years. Some of it is irrational. It's her proximity to Bill Clinton and the role she's played in his career, you know, even serving as Carl Bernstein pointed out in his book on Hillary Clinton as kind of a threatening committee of one with the mistresses. It's a very unusual position for a wife to take to try and shut the mistresses up lest they do harm to the political careers of her and her husband. So this is a very
unusual
candidate.
Can I add something there that I think it really goes back to that McCain clip that we heard and the response to it where he was talking about Woodstock versus him being tied up at the time. Remember when Bill Clinton was first elected president, and just after the election, way before he was sworn in, he spoke at a Veterans Day event, I guess at Arlington National Cemetery, and he was so roundly booed, and it went back to his Vietnam alleged draft dodging, and it went back really to the culture wars of the 60s, and what, you know, people on the cultural right saw the Clintons as standing for, being the first people to come out of the liberal part of the 1960s, you know, rising to that degree of power. And that still presses people's buttons like crazy on a cultural level. Do you think I'm overplaying it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. We relived the 60s and the 90s, those very same culture wars. And I have to say, if Hillary Clinton is elected, we're going to relive them again for 4 or 8 more years.
I'm
it's
not
just
sure.
Inevitable.
I'm not sure. I think that maybe times have really changed now. After 9/11, there's a new generation coming up. You know, that we're 15 years down the road already from 1992 when Bill Clinton was elected. 9/11 changes everything to some degree. I don't know. There's a new generation coming up that wasn't involved in those culture wars and looks askance at both sides. You know, I'm not sure.
Well, that's a good point. But remember, the older generation that went after Bill Clinton is still very much in power in many of the media circles, and they are absolutely not going to accept Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right. Quick thing about Hillary, before we talk about some of your constitutional amendment proposals. Hillary and the trouble that she's having with her own party right now. I'm sure you know that she actually sent a letter to voters in Iowa over the last few days, trying to explain her vote in the Senate to declare the Iranian Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. This is being seen by some Democrats as another cave-in to President Bush, like before the Iraq War. What does it mean that she has actually written a letter to Iowa voters to explain herself?
She understands that it's a problem. It's been picked up on by Barack Obama, by John Edwards, by Bill Richardson. And
all over the blogs. Netroots
are all over the blogs. Because remember, they have suspicions about her since she voted for the Iraq War to authorize the Iraq War to begin with. Now this resolution is being interpreted as the same kind of door opening to a Bush invasion or attack on Iran. They think that it's an indication of her not just audacity, but also presumption that she is, in fact, already running as the Democratic nominee for president. Not a vote has been cast, and that is important to note. No one's cast a vote except for the media.
We will see what happens on that issue. We'll continue. We've done a segment or two specifically on that issue, and we'll continue to look in depth at what it means to declare Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. Does it really authorize President Bush to take military action, as some say, and Hillary says it does not? One thing about Rudy, he is running as the mayor of 9/11, the guy who tamed New York, somebody who would be tough on terrorism. And of course, he's embracing to the extent that he has to his more liberal positions on some social issues. I think what hasn't gotten out there yet to the nation about Rudy Giuliani is how divisive he was as a mayor of New York until September 10th, and that the way he deals with people who disagree with him, you know, and for people who know Rudy, you can hear it in the debates, but for people who disagree with him, he's really an enemies list kind of mayor, and that people seem to be so sick of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld approach to government in this respect, after Bush had run as a uniter, not a divider, and turned out to be a divider, not a uniter. This should be at least debated about Rudy Giuliani's record, and it doesn't seem to me that the question has even sunk in nationally. What do you think, sitting in Charlottesville?
You're raising a very important point. Look, if he's the nominee, I can guarantee you that will be discussed, because the Clinton people will use his record to suggest that, well, yes, we, that is the Hillary Clinton, may be a polarizer, but so too is Rudy Giuliani. Therefore, you don't really have a choice. You'll be polarized either way. See, they'll try and neutralize Hillary Clinton's negative on that basis. Now, why aren't the Republicans raising it? Because I don't know that really cuts against Giuliani in a Republican primary. Republicans like toughness.
Let me get one more moderate Republican in here and see what he thinks about that. Mark in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hey, thank you. It's a great show. Wow.
Thank you.
You know, I'm a moderate suburban Republican, and you know, I know we're not the majority in the National Republican Party, but I'm looking at these debates from that standpoint. And to me, you know, Romney is the best candidate so far. I didn't know anything about him until these debates started, but you know, it's a balanced approach. I get a little worried with Rudy. I mean, as somebody who works in the city and grew up in the city, there's something about his personality that just rubs me the wrong way, even though, you know, on the issues, I probably agree with him, you know, 90% of the way. I do think his focus on this 9/11 mentality is really the wrong thing going forward. And I think you get a more of a balanced approach across the issues from Romney.
Interesting. Mark, thank you very much. Please call us again. Real quick, Larry, on Romney's appeal.
Yes. No, the gentleman makes an interesting point there about Romney, and he should know that the reason Romney took so many attacks last night, and I mean people really went after him, is because he's leading in Iowa and New Hampshire. Now, it's narrow. He seems to have plateaued. I don't know if it's going to continue, but he is the front runner in the two states that matter most. So there are two theories about Romney. One is that in a general election, he would do very well because he's an excellent media candidate. He comes across well on TV. He's highly articulate. The other theory is that mainly because of Mormonism, he will end up being highly unacceptable to both left and to the fundamentalist Christians on the right.
Hey, what's that about? Maybe you can explain that to my New York audience because, you know, my New York audience is mostly like Jews and Episcopalians and Democrats, and they look at the evangelicals and the Mormons and say, well, yeah, okay, they're basically the same, like really right-wing non-Catholic Christians. But the evangelicals, many of them really don't trust Romney because he's a Mormon. What's the issue?
Yeah, the issue is that quite a number of evangelical Christian leaders over the years have called Mormonism a non-Christian cult. And their followers have adopted that philosophy, and they are very worried about where Romney would take the country.
It's the Church of Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ,
yeah,
isn't it?
Look, I'm just telling you what they say.
Yeah, it's a theological thing.
They have doctrinal disputes with them, and those things can matter, certainly in the South and the border states. I think it's going to be an issue if Romney is the nominee. I'm not saying it should be. I'm of the John F. Kennedy generation. I thought we got over religious barriers in politics in 1960, but how wrong I was.
Aren't the Mormons the ones who dig up all the genealogical records and then convert everybody to Christianity?
Yeah, they're the ones who study genealogy, and they have some interesting theories. Look, all religions have certain oddities to them. I think that's fair to say.
That's fair to say.
Because, after all, it's a matter of faith and not of proven fact. But people are focusing on the oddities in the Mormon church and making it very difficult for Romney.
Larry Sabato, University of Virginia. Political analyst, my guest. His new book is A More Perfect Constitution, 23 Proposals to Revitalize Our Constitution and Make America a Fairer Country, published by Walker. I'm just going to read a few of these so people get a little bit of a sense. Then we'll talk about what you're after on a broad sense. And you're going to come back to go into a few of these in more detail. But Congress, number one, expand the Senate to 86 members.
No, 136 is supposed to be. Yeah.
I'm sorry, 136 yep. members. I'm reading from the press release.
Right.
To be more represented, grant the 10 most populous states 2 additional senators, the 15 next most populous states 1 additional senator, and the District of Columbia 1 senator. Expand the size of the House to approximately 1,000 members from the current 435. Why make Congress so much bigger?
All right. These are very strange ideas to your listeners, and I hope that they will give the ideas a chance by reading the book, because they actually go back to the founders' intentions about Congress. George Washington wanted an ever-expanding House. He worried that as the districts got too large, that representatives would be removed from the people. That's exactly what's happened. As far as the Senate is concerned, James Madison, the father of the Constitution, believed that over time it would become untenable for very small states to have the same representation as gargantuan states like California and New York and Florida and Texas. And I think there's some justification for that view, too.
All right.
So I hope people will read these arguments. They're designed to be provocative. I hope they'll cause people to think more deeply about our system and the Constitution.
And you propose term limits for the House and the Senate, a balanced budget amendment, to establish a new six-year, one-time presidential term with the option for the president to seek two additional years in an up-down referendum of the American people. So in other words, when you first get elected for president, it's for 6 years, and then you could run for another two.
That's right.
In an up-down referendum. And what would that accomplish?
Basically, it would take presidents away from the party base. Instead of having to run for re-election and renomination as a partisan, and therefore try to serve the partisan base, right-wing in the Republican Party, left-wing in the Democratic Party, from day one, they'd be representing the vast majority of Americans who are clustered in the center. And many presidents, I think, would choose the six-year term and would not run for any additional extension. The extension is there if we're in a war, if there's a major piece of the president's program that he's trying to get or she's trying to get adopted and needs the additional 2 years, and it would be a judicial confirmation election. The president's name is on the ballot, you vote yes or no, because that's really what our elections are about anyway for incumbent presidents. We're either keeping the president on or we're throwing the president out. The opponent is almost an add-on.
You also propose allowing men and women not born in the U.S. to run for president or vice president after having been a citizen for 20 years. That's the Arnold Schwarzenegger Amendment.
Right. And remember, we're not talking about illegal immigrants here. We're talking about people who've played by the rules and become Americans. 700 Medal of Honor winners in American history have been foreign-born and unable to run for president. 30,000 current troops around the world who are risking life and limb for us are in this category.
Yep. Eliminate lifetime tenure for federal judges, including the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. 15-year terms for all of them. If we have term limits for president, for House, and for Senate, we ought to have them for the judiciary, too. They get out of touch just as much, if not more so, than the other branches.
And expand the size of the Supreme Court, you say, from 9 to 12 to be more representative. We're almost out of time. One campaign finance reform proposal, and you have a bunch, but to prevent wealthy candidates from financing their campaigns, you would pass an amendment that prohibits that. But isn't Michael Bloomberg kind of turning that argument on his head? Isn't he proving, with as excellent a mayor as he's been by so many people's lights, that the self-financed candidate can truly be independent of the political party's bases, which is something that you're after, a lot more than candidates who are financed by Exxon or the unions or whatever?
Sure, hard cases make bad law, though. Anyway, I can point to exceptions for virtually everything that I propose or anybody else proposes, but you have to come up with ideas that apply generally. It may eliminate Bloomberg, although I don't think so. I mean, I think Bloomberg would have made a fine candidate even without spending enormous sums from his own fortune.
And you propose a constitutional requirement that all able-bodied young Americans devote at least 2 years of their lives in service to the country, and on from there. Some of the 23 constitutional amendments proposed by Larry Sabato, author of A More Perfect Constitution, 23 proposals to revitalize our Constitution and make America a fairer country. Thanks for spending so much time doing the political analysis with us this morning. And as I said, we will have you back to go into some detail on a few of these constitutional amendments.
It was a lot of fun and great questions from your listeners. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Talk to you maybe in a few weeks.
Good.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. Well, it's not quite a constitutional amendment, but it is a proposal to change the law. Should we exempt bicycles from the traffic laws in New York City? Stay tuned.